You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the fabulous 54 Below. Before we get started this evening, just a polite reminder, please take this moment to silence your cell phones, and also there is no flash photography, please.
Welcome to the 54 Below podcast. I'm Kevin Ferguson, an assistant programming director here at the club, and our guest today is currently one of the members of the Sixth, the musical on Broadway. She made her Broadway debut in Groundhog's Day back in 2017. She was in Head Over Heels and back in 2018. She's been in Hamilton and so many more shows. And on March 6th, she is returning to 54 Below, making her solo concert debut, and we're also celebrating her birthday that night. Please, everyone, help me welcome Taylor Iman Jones.
Hey. Hey, everybody.
What's up? This is so exciting. You are no stranger to 54, but maybe a stranger to somebody listening to this podcast. So, Taylor, how you feeling?
I feel so good. You know, yeah. It's a new year. I'm kind of in this middle place of like new beginnings, but also like carrying everything that you've been working on up until this moment, you know, with you. So I'm feeling good.
Yeah.
And I'm so excited to be here and talk to you.
I know. It is definitely giving first week of the new year. I feel like we're living in the future right now, kind of still. Like
yes.
That transition into the new year is like, whoa, we're in the future. But no, we're here. And we got big things coming this year, like you returning to 54 Below to do your solo concert on the 6th and 7th of March. We're going to get all into that later, but yes. Before we get into that, let's tell the people who don't know who you are a little bit about you. Like, where you're from? How did this whole theater bug, performer bug start for you?
Oh, great. Yeah. I'll do a short version. I am from the Bay Area in California. Mm-hmm. I lived there until I was about 24. When I was a little kid, I was always into music. So I was always taking piano lessons. I was in band all through middle school and high school. And along that route, a girl at my school invited me to do the local youth theater. My first show was Bugsy Malone and I was about 11 years old and I just haven't stopped since. So that's kind of the long story short of that. I just, once I felt that spotlight and hit the stage, it was just all my dreams coming true, and I've been fortunate enough to keep it going, so here we are.
No, it's definitely that spotlight, that feeling is like no other. I don't even know how to describe it. The bright light, it's so strong. You can't even see who's out there, but you know they're all looking at you. It's such a weird mindset to be put in. So you doing children's theater, you know, you caught the bug real early. Did you, like, after high school, pursue any, like, college? Or were you kind of like, no, I'm moving straight to New York, or I'm starting to audition for this right away?
No, I thought about going to college. I was planning. So right when I graduated high school, I had already started doing community theater. So I'd kind of started already transferring out of youth theater into the local cities around me. And so I asked my parents if I could like take a year off, you know, as we all do, just so I could do theater and also like work. You know, I was working retail at the outlets. And so that was about a year. After that year went by, I started going to the community college to also start a journey of like, maybe I'll do community college for 2 years and then transfer. I was still doing theater, but just not involved with my school. So it was just more community, more regional theater. Lucky for me, the Bay Area had plenty to choose from. So I really got to dip my toe into just about everything. Around 2014 is when I was thinking about moving to New York. But at that time, I was lucky enough to book the American Idiot non-equity tour. So this is when, I think they still do this actually, shows will like come to Chicago or San Francisco, just kind of do across the country looking for, you know, casting. And so they had a San Francisco leg and they had done it a couple years. And like the first year I went, I think I got a little mini callback, but then this was the second time and I got invited to final callbacks and then booked that tour. So that was 8 months of, you know, like my first big gig, you know, out of California. I got to tour. I'd never done a show longer than like a month before. So that was that experience. But it also really helped me check myself. because I was, you know, that cast maybe had 24, 25 people in it, counting like our understudies and swings. And out of all of that, I was one of two people who hadn't gone to school.
Wow.
Everyone else had like just graduated. Mm-hmm. And not that I felt, you know, we each had our strengths. Like I felt like I had a good amount of knowledge of like how to be a professional, but mm-hmm. they had a greater knowledge of theater history, a little bit more technique. And so coming back to the Bay, I was like, okay, I need to train. Mm-hmm. And so I really started taking a bunch of dance classes. One of the choreographers, Jennifer Perry, shout out to her, in Walnut Creek. She's been a choreographer of mine a few times, but she also runs a ballet school. So mm-hmm. she let me come to class. I took that. I took a whole lot of advantage of that. And so I was going to ballet 5 times a week. I started taking acting classes at ACT. They had just opened up an undergrad, like semester long intensive. So I did that. I just really wanted to like get ready for New York.
Yeah.
And my tour had shown me like, oh yeah, I'm not just competing against, you know, the best people in the Bay. I'm competing against the best people in the country, the best people in the world.
Okay.
And, you know, especially once you move to New York, you realize you're not just, again, competing against, you know, the new class of people who moved there.
Mm-hmm.
You are now up against the veterans, the people mm-hmm. who have been on Broadway for, you know, 3, 4, 5, 20 years, you know? So I just wanted to be as prepared as I could for that. So that's kind of, you know, my training.
Yeah.
Is a lot of bits and pieces that I've picked up and put myself in along the way.
You know, and I just feel like that's so cool. I think more artists need to hear that there are so many different ways you can get to New York. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, almost every artist can tell you the power of training. Like, training is very much needed. Even if you are one of those like natural talent kids, you know what I mean? That was like, who mm-hmm. taught you this? And you're like, I don't know. I just saw it on TV. There comes a point where you can get better if you do some training.
Yeah. I mean, it's not even about like, if you think you're good enough or you can finally stop, it's just like, don't you want to be better at this thing?
Right.
Like, don't you want longevity in this thing? And just like any medium, any craft, the longer you study, the better you'll be. And the more or at least for me, the more fun it is to discover more about that thing. And
that culture shock of maybe you're a big fish where you're from. And then you move to New York and you're in this giant pond with giant fish.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
With sharks.
With sharks. You know,
whales.
I mean? Okay.
For real.
That idea of like coming here and self-motivation, how mm-hmm. did you, because I moved here with my whole university class. You know, we all mm-hmm. graduated together and we all moved here at the same time. You kind of like came to New York by yourself. You mentioned a few mentors, but were you able to have any kind of like guidance when you first moved here, or kind of how were you able to like seek chosen family in a way, and that kind of
totally,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, I will say I was kind of one of the first people like in my, you know, generation or class, mm-hmm. if you want to call it, from the Bay mm-hmm. that I moved. So I didn't really have anyone yet that I could latch onto, but I did have a few of my American Idiot past cast members. Mm-hmm. So that's how I found an apartment I ended up living with past cast members. I think my, like the people who have really helped shape my career truly were my agents and my managers. So mm-hmm. I got super lucky back in the Bay. So while I was like, okay, this is the year. Now it's 2016, end of 2015. I'm like, I'm dedicating my whole life to like working my job and training mm-hmm. because I'm going to New York next year, no matter what. Like, that's just what I have to do. I remember I was trying to earn enough equity points to turn equity. And then right at the end, I finally got the show I needed to get me my points, which was a brand new musical at ACT. While I was performing at that show, one of my fellow cast members' managers came to see him. But they saw me as well. And so they were asking about me, you know, what are your plans? You know, we are based in LA, but we represent everybody all over the country. We'd love to talk to you. And so, long story short, I did end up signing with them. So these are two women, Kay and Lenore, I adore them so much. Mm-hmm. since they were managers in LA, they're like, if you move to New York, we'll help you get agents in New York. And so that's happened. So now I'm with Cornerstone, who I also love, Steve Stone. He's amazing. So when I moved to New York, luckily I had them. Mm-hmm. And so I say I had done all the work to get myself ready for this opportunity. I think that's Oprah's quote, like, luck is opportunity plus preparation. So I felt like I had done all the preparation I could, and they were able to get me in the rooms I needed to be in. But also I was just willing to work, like, because I was a kid who in high school always worked another job, whether it's retail or whatever. Like, I was like, I'll just get a waitressing job. I threw an American Idiot friend. She was able to get me a job at Five Napkin Burgers. So I was a waitress.
Yes, come on, Five Napkin Burgers.
Yeah, you know, they're delicious. But I was ready just to do the grind, you know, to be a waitress, to go to the auditions. Because especially when you move to New York, as important as auditioning is, you got to pay your rent first. You got to eat food. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to find a bed if you don't have a bed. And so that reality hit very quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, just because I'm someone who had to do it very much by themselves. And so, you know, you figure that out first. Yep. And then you can go to an audition, and that's what makes New York and just, you know, Broadway hard in general. But I think that was my mindset, was just get grounded, you know that it's going to be hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, obviously that grounding and you prepping yourself, knowing that New York was going to be hard, some kind of way worked out, because my notes are telling me that Groundhog Day, that was 2 months after you moved to New York City. Can we talk about that story, you booking your Broadway debut 2 months after moving to New York City?
Yeah.
And it's Groundhog Day. That's hilarious.
And it's a good story. So, like I said, so my friend Jenna Rubai, who was an American Idiot before me, I actually replaced her on that tour. Mm. She is the one who was working at Five Napkin, and she helped me become a waitress. Or there was another girl who worked there too, who might have gotten us both jobs. But anyway, Jenna worked there. Like a month into me working, Jenna had to quit, or she had already put her months in because she was going to be on Broadway in Groundhog Day. Mm-hmm. So here I am now. I think she left, and so I got promoted because I was a host and they needed a waitress. So I think I literally took her spot once again. And so, yes, Groundhog Day was just one of many. You know, I'm new to New York, so my agents were trying to get me into every audition that was there. And Groundhog Day was looking very specifically for one more ensemble member. The entire show had been cast, but they needed a woman in the ensemble who could also understudy the female leads. Mm. And so here I am. I go. I make it through a few rounds. I make it through, I think there were three rounds, like one big round, you know, another smaller, maybe there were like 6 to 10 girls there. Finally, like one final one. And then I get a call that's like, hey, you're invited to your final callback, and it's just a dance call. And I'm like, okay, cool. You know, whatever. Great. This is what I get. I show up. I quickly find out that I am the only person at this dance call. Oof. It is a solo dance call. And I do not consider myself a dancer. I think I'm an excellent mover. Mm-hmm. I still take classes. You know, I love to dance.
But as far as Broadway dances go, you didn't.
That is not my label, okay? I also, you know, they were like, bring your tap shoes. And I had met a couple of people who had gone to this call, and they were like, oh, it's not really a tap dance. Like, it's more just like rhythm. Like, you step in rhythm, and they just want to see if you can keep time. And I'm like, oh, great. I took some tap, like, you know, as a teenager over the summer. Like, I can do that. I get there. It ended up being a solid 2.5 hours. And I did, I think, 4 dance numbers, because there was at least 2 tap combinations. Mm. And they were true combinations. And I was like, oh my God. You know, at one point, it's just literally just me, the dance associate, and our casting person, who also is the casting person who cast me in American Idiot, Jillian. But so here we are, probably 90 minutes into this thing, and the casting or the choreographer comes up to me. She's like, hey, so, you know, it's a really high energy show. you're doing great. We're going to start recording videos. I need you at a 10. And right now you're at about a 4. Face crack. Legit. Like, I'm already at my wit's end. This is already the most, like, the hardest hours. Audition. Yes, it's the hardest thing I've ever done. And I cry. I start crying, like, immediately. Like, I'm not bawling, but I'm just like, okay. And, like, I can't help it. And she's like, no, darling, don't cry. Oh, no. It's going to be all right. You're going to be all right. We're going to get it. Anyway, they are very sweet. I finished the combination. I did my absolute best. A week later, I get the phone call from my team that's like, hey, Taylor, they loved you in the room, but they're going to move on. They are looking for someone who's a stronger dancer. And I was like, you know what? That's fine with me because I didn't come here for that. There's no world that I'm going to, like, go take a dance class and come back and be an entirely different dancer than I was,
yeah,
you know, 2 days ago. And so I'm like, happy for the whatever. I know they had then another round of auditions. And then I got another call that said I booked it.
They said, you know what? Taylor's actually good enough. This is great.
And so I think my other strengths, my acting and my singing, especially since this track had to understudy the leads, is what helped me book the role. So I like telling that story because, you know, I think it's important to work on all of your talents.
Yeah.
But never let, you know, maybe feeling weaker or less than in one of your areas derail your entire mentality, you know? That was that story. And then we started in January. It was great.
I just feel like for you, it is a matter of just, like, your energy and everyone, you know, wanting to help you in that moment. It was, you know, people who had known you from other places, and, you know, a lot can happen. I was interviewing a writer the other day, and he said he had moved to New York the week before the shutdown in 2020. Mm-hmm. But in that 1 week, he was able to make a connection that held him down for the whole entire quarantine when he moved back to Michigan.
Wow.
And he was able to come back to New York in 2021 with connections that he had made in that first week of that 1 week of living in New York City. You know, you said it sounds like a quick situation with you being in Groundhog's Day after 2 months of living in New York. But, you know, living in New York, 2 months is a very long time. A lot can happen in 2 months. You know?
So that's what I was going to say. Even when you're, like, the story you just told with being in New York for a week, I'm like, that's very New York. New York.
Yeah.
New York is no joke.
Yeah.
It's just no joke.
But you've always wanted to move here. You always felt like New York was the place, or did you kind of like, or did you have other dreams as a kid?
No, I've been very, very centered. I think, you know, once theater was introduced to me, mm-hmm. I just feel like I've never looked back. I just love it so much.
Yeah.
And so I've dedicated a lot of my life to it. And so I think when I was 13, you know, my middle school eighth grade trip was a trip to New York. Mm-hmm. And like, then we went to New York and Washington, D.C. and Pennsylvania. You know, you see all the founding father stuff. And so I had already knew about Broadway. I remember I just started doing musicals, and Fiddler was the second musical I had ever done in my life. And on that eighth grade trip,
I am Fiddler. Do you remember?
Hoddle.
Yes. Okay.
Of course. but Fiddler was the show we were seeing in New York.
Wow.
I can't remember right now if it was actually on Broadway or off Broadway, but it was starring Harvey Fierstein.
Yeah.
As Tevye.
Yeah.
And I knew him because of Hairspray. I'd already, like, been aware of Hairspray. So, like, mm-hmm. you know, I was probably the only kid on that trip who was looking forward to this part of our trip.
When are we going to go see Fiddler with Harvey?
I didn't even know he was in it. I just knew we were seeing Fiddler in New York. And then, of course, you know, he opens his mouth and you're like, I know that voice. And so, and then my mom has brought me back a few times, like once when I was 16. And,
It's giving you were kind of like a little theater nerd. You were kind of like
a thousand.
Okay, so let's talk about it, because now you are on Broadway and you have booked a couple Broadway shows. Now we're gonna get into all of them, but I want to specifically talk about Hamilton and Six being so fan base based.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you being that little nerdy theater kid, does that ever get exciting to see the nerdy theater kids excited to see you at the stage door? Like, what is that moment now like?
Yes, it is so crazy. You know, Hamilton for me is it's really its own story because that is my pandemic. Mm. I moved to LA to do Hamilton March 2020.
Wow.
So there's a lot of ups and downs for in that show. But Six, especially now, like that we're here, and because of the nature of Six, where, you know, it's interacting with the audience from the opening. So I'm literally talking to you, you know, in seat C11 and you up there in G25. Like, so I get a lot of joy every single day, every single performance in Six, because I can see how much joy it brings to people.
Yeah.
Whether they are Six fans, whether they've never seen Six before, whether they've never been to a musical before. My favorite is to watch, or one of my favorite, but my favorite are the little kids, honestly, like who are just getting their mind blown, and the little kids who like couldn't be less impressed.
right. My mom told also me I had like,
you'd be exactly. But also like the husbands and the boyfriends who are clearly dragged to this thing.
Yeah.
And then by the end, watching them like stand up, have a great time, you know, are singing along with us. And also the, for me, like, you know, you didn't mention it, but Six and Head Over Heels, I think have a similar effect as well with like bringing families together. Yeah. It's those two shows I've seen, you know, and even Hamilton for that matter, but you see the parents with their kids enjoying singing the songs, having a moment together, and it feels really good to be able to provide that space for people in the world.
I feel like you have really locked into some really fun shows. We definitely did Graze Over Head Over Heels. We got to talk about it because I just feel like I was so heartbroken with that show's whole story. I feel like it was gone too soon. But while it was there, everyone was living for it. So I just feel like you have been able to be lucky enough to be in these shows that are just so fan fueled, like the fans just live for that show. They'll go see it every day type stuff. And I think that's so cool. But I do want to talk about your quarantine experience, because I like to ask, especially artists when they come on here, what was 2020 like for them? Some people have like amazing stories like, oh, my career actually turned around because I turned into this whole virtual star type of situation, or I was able to focus on my training some more, and it was able to give me a chance to relax and recoup energy to go back into auditioning. Or some people were like, it was terrible, it was the darkest thing that ever happened. What was your 2020 like?
I'd be like somewhere in the middle. Or not even, no, like, so, well, let me speak in full sentences. So my 2020, like I said, started with what I thought would be the Hamilton contract. And also, you know, right before I got Hamilton is when I also got the call for Devil Wears Prada. Ah. So I very much thought my 2020 would be
a little different.
Something a little different. obviously, everything shuts down. I stayed in LA for a few months. I was right in Hollywood on Hollywood Boulevard. I saw from my balcony, like not even from my balcony, but from the stairwell of my apartment, that giant Black Lives Matter march that went down with like hundreds of thousands of people or whatever, like that huge one. And then after I realized like, oh, our show is not coming for a while, I ended up moving back in with my parents up in the Bay because they could use the help. They were thinking about moving themselves, like just changing houses. So I knew that would be a big thing for them. And, you know, I don't want to pay rent. So I moved back in with them and stayed with them for about a year the whole time. And it was really special. It was, you know, I just turned 30. And so it was interesting to move back in with my parents at this point in my life.
Yeah.
And also not like I have to move back. Like I could have moved back and, you know, I could have moved to New York and found a room and all that. But, you know, I wanted to spend this time with them. We really got to know each other on a new level.
Your family.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
me and my parents specifically. We've always been close. Like, but, you know, I think I'm the youngest of their three kids. So I think it's felt like that for a while. But now coming back and being able to help physically, financially, emotionally, you know, was really important and cool for us.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that very much. I think like everybody else on a different note, like I ended up with a bunch of equipment that I never thought I'd have.
Okay.
Green screens and microphones. Oh. And
okay.
I tried, you know, try to make beats at one point. Like I learned a lot of random things.
Yeah.
I picked up random hobbies that some I keep, some I don't.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think for me, when I think about the pandemic, it's me spending time with my parents and kind of creating a new chapter of our relationship, which was super cool.
Yeah. It was such a weird time of the unknown. Like,
yeah,
like you said, it was Hamilton and Devil Wears Prada, and then it was nothing. So there was definitely a moment. I'm sure the producers and everyone were like, no, nothing. the show's coming. But then the pandemic just kept going and kept going. So it's like,
oh,
when is the show coming? But luckily, we are here now. And
yes,
this past summer, you were able to finally do The Devil Wears Prada.
Yes.
And it was like lived for. Like that was the workshop out of town. But is there a difference? Do you feel a difference with workshops and Broadway shows? And how was just the whole Devil Wears Prada, you know, experience this past summer?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, and just to put that into context too, for Devil Wears Prada, I got that phone call in the winter of 2019.
Wow.
That I booked the role.
Wow.
And even with that call, they're like, we're going to push it back a year though, just so you know, but it's you. So you're like,
it's
okay.
It's coming one day.
Yeah. And then the pandemic hit. So they're like, another year, but it's you.
Oh, wow.
And so it was a long time coming.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely in the pandemic, you're like, that's what I'm holding on to. But also like, will anything happen? But anyway. Yeah, this is my first time doing a brand new show out of town that wasn't immediately going to transfer. So like with Head Over Heels, we got to do that out of town in San Francisco, which was very cool. But that was like, we'll do our out of town and then next month we're going to start our Broadway thing. Like that was always part of the plan.
Mm-hmm.
So I think like the turnaround was a little different. Like the work, it was a little different going into that because you knew where it was going. Where Prada is very like, you know, open-ended, or at least like, you know, the turnaround wasn't so quick. So I think that provides a little less pressure of like, we must lock down exactly what it is right now.
Yeah.
Which is fun, which is hard and fun because then you are truly creating every single day. You get to be like, this works. At that point in my career, I had done a few new musicals already, you know, whether in New York or out of town. So I had a better understanding of how a new musical works, how, you know, the work it takes, but also the trying new things, whether you think it's good or not, and seeing how they work. I also had more confidence in myself. So, you know, I'm a better listener. I'm a better collaborator. I had old habits from other shows where I tend to be like, no, that's not going to work before I even try it on its feet. But now in my career, I'm like, yeah, okay, let's go. Let's try. Let's see what happens. But I also have enough confidence to be like, you know what? I have an idea. Or to be like, I know why this isn't working. Or this isn't working for me because blah, 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 blah. Even, you know, from workshop to on stage for Prada, there was a whole song that I was like, this song isn't working.
Mm-hmm.
I need, you know, it's at this point in the show, Andy needs to have this moment. And I'm telling you, I'm doing my best that I can with this material and you're going to feel moved, but it's not the movement we want.
You said, I'm going to make it work.
Yeah.
I'm going to do the work, but there has to be something better. That is so exciting. I feel like as an actor, I have never felt confident to be like, this ain't it. They make you feel comfortable in that moment because they trusted you. You trusted them. It was a collaborative kind of like moment. It kind of was welcoming like that in the beginning. I don't know anything about that. So I would just be so scared. I would imagine people are so precious about their art and their writing, and you know what I mean, you don't want to step on anybody's toes or anything like that. So
yeah, all of that is exactly right. It can be extremely nerve-wracking and scary, But, you know, you got to know, you have to be willing to put in ideas, and you also have to be willing for your ideas not to be taken.
Yeah.
You know, it. You can't make a musical by yourself. There are so many people in the room. It can even be like, oh, I think this is a good idea, but that won't work for lighting, or that won't work for costumes. That won't work for another part of the show. So you just have to be willing to give and take and give yourself some grace. You know, don't take anything personally.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, be brave. You know, it's, I think because, you know, I still remind myself even to this day, even, you know, with six, that I'm like, oh, that's right. I know what I'm doing. I have done this before.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
This isn't my first musical. This isn't my 10th musical. I don't even think this is my 100th musical. Like, I've done so many that has to count for something. And I refuse to not let it count for anything anymore.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And on purpose, doing everything for a purpose, on purpose. Mm-hmm. I love that. I do think you have the shows that you've been able to do are so fun and exciting. It just makes me feel like, what kind of roles do you think you want to do or you're naturally attracted to? Like, what's your like dream kind of Broadway shows?
You know, six is definitely checking one of the boxes. I mean, yeah. I get to be a literal pop star.
Yeah.
Every night. Like, I get to put on a super cool costume and sing into a mic and, you know, be at the audience. Are you ready? Like,
yeah. Uh-huh.
That experience is so cool and so unlike anything we get to do in, right. You know, the musical, classical musical theater world. So that is very cool to be experiencing right now. Prada was really fun because I had, in my, you know, New York career, hadn't really led a show like that before. I hadn't had that much responsibility on stage. So I'm looking forward to doing that again and again in my career.
Yeah.
You know, I love the ingenue. I just love strong, funny roles. Yeah. And I think I'm looking forward to, you know, doing a revival or something like that. I've done a ton of contemporary musicals, you know, jukebox musicals, rock musicals, and I love them and I want to keep doing them, but I haven't done like, you know, a golden age or something really.
Oh, what would be that golden age? What are you thinking?
I mean, I know this is a new musical technically, but it's on my brain. So like Some Like It's Hot, I don't know if you've seen that yet.
Yes.
But like Adriana's role is more, so beautiful.
Yeah. More conventional musical theater.
Yeah. I also love singing legit. So like Millie even, you know, something like that's still a contemporary musical, but like.
Okay. No, we're getting it. We're getting what you're putting down. Yeah.
And so I'd love to, you know, show Broadway, but also flex my muscles in that way as well. You know, the best thing about working with Beth Level in Prada is
Beth Level. We love her at 54.
Yes, exactly. You know, she is loved everywhere, but she also, it's just, she calls herself a worker bee. Like, you know, that she knows that she's done a ton of Broadway musicals and she's going to do a ton more. And so at this point in my career, I'm not so much like, ooh, I'm trying to do this or I'm trying to do that version or that type of, or whatever. I'm more just like, ooh, I can't wait to see like, what comes up in my life.
Yeah.
Because I never could have predicted anything I've done up until this moment. And it's been pretty cool. It's been pretty great. So I can only assume that there's going to be, you know, as much as we can all know that disappointment will be there or whatever, that there will also be just moments of magic. And I'm so excited and really staying open to as many moments of magic as I can possibly have.
Well, you're about to make some magic of your own in March at 54. You have a whole show coming up that you get to put together and have every, you know, choice over. You're doing a cabaret solo concert debut at the 54 Below. How do you feel about that coming up? Any secret guest appearances or secret set list songs that you plan on?
Yeah,
you know,
I almost forgot that's what we're here to keep.
Oh,
like,
yeah, we've
that's
been
what we're here for.
We kind of forgot.
No, I'm so excited. I mean, 54 Below is just the coolest thing. I grew up as a kid watching everyone, you know, on YouTube singing at 54 Below. You recognize that background. You recognize those lights. So now it feels very special to be like a 54 regular.
Okay.
That feels
yes.
nice. Mm-hmm. But to do my solo show there, I am so nervous. It feels scary, but I'm excited. This will be the first time that I'm going to play mostly my own music.
Oh,
I'm gonna be
you
sharing...
did mention beat making during the quarantine, and I was going to lean into that, but I didn't know if you wanted to. Now I have to, because you're bringing in original music, Taylor. That is
originally
exciting.
I don't know if I'll be bringing in like beats and tracks, but I did I did over the pandemic write a few songs. I've been writing songs since then and before then, and so I've been really inspired by other people I've seen at 54 at other venues sharing their music. And I think last year I've realized was my year of actually asking for help when I needed help. And I think this year is the year, like, I want to get out of my own way. So as far as like, I've been too afraid, like, what if people don't like my music or what if it doesn't resonate? But that's not the point. Like, the point is to share. The point is to be brave and know that someone out there is going to relate, and you may be able to give them a space to feel held, to feel recognized, to feel seen, because that's what music does for me. So I'm excited. I have asked my band, I don't want to give any names away in case people, who knows, but I have a band, so that'll be the first time I'm playing with other people. I'm very excited. I can't believe it's actually happening. But I'm also really happy to do it at 54, a place that I feel so comfortable and so at home at now in my life.
Have you created a show before? Like, for any other kind of situation, do you feel like you've like created shows before? How is that process? Like, for me personally, it's the seeing the show in your head, and then the night that the show comes, you see everyone else seeing that idea that was in your head. That is my favorite moment. You know what I mean?
Yes. I've done like a Broadway cabaret back in California.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was really cool. It was the first time that I got to choose every song. I get to sing all my favorite music and like turn to the band and be like, actually, I want to end this way and I'm going to come in this way and we're going to cut that. And I remember, especially in the second time I did it, we got to a song that I didn't feel like singing that night.
Yeah.
And I got to turn around and be like, we're going to skip that.
Absolutely.
And then keep going. And I was like, oh, I own everything. Like, this is my space.
This is my show. Okay.
Yeah. So this is a little different because I'm sharing my own music. So there's a bit more of a precious nature, I think, about it, but, I think it's going to be good. I'm like, I like my song, so I'm sure someone else will like it. And I'm excited for, people in New York to get to know another side of me.
Yeah.
And to share that, I'm not necessarily trying to be out here like, and I'm going to have the number one on Apple. Look out for, I just want to continue to be a creator of space.
Listen, I'm into manifestation, so you are gonna be the number one on Apple, okay, Spotify, all the title, all of them, okay?
Let's go.
Oh, Taylor, this has been so fun. Okay, so my last question I like to ask, especially because of your own story, being from the Bay Area, that's like the complete opposite side of the country. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that push and that move to New York or that leave your hometown moment is a really hard moment for a lot of artists. What did you have to tell yourself, or what could you tell someone else who's maybe listening to this podcast at home, like wanting to pursue their dream career of moving to New York and doing the theater like you excelled and did, you know what I mean? What would you tell someone who's a
believe
little iffy
in yourself.
About it?
I always say believe in yourself more than anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you're doing theater. I think if you're doing pursuing anything, but you're gonna get some people who believe in you, who love you, and then you're gonna get a few who absolutely don't and may laugh at you, and then you're gonna get the others who believe in you but just don't have space for you. And I think that's the hardest thing.
Don't talk about that one enough.
Yeah, where it's like, oh, you're great. You're just, we can't have you here. And that can be hard on yourself because you're like, but what do you mean?
Make room
for
me.
Yeah. So I think, one, believe in yourself, anybody else, but two, believe in your life.
Ooh.
Believe in your whole life. Yes, go for it. Go for the gold. You have to work as hard as you can at this thing, but you can't do that thing if you don't have a life yourself. Mm. If you're empty, you can't give. And so find your friends, be a good friend, you know, protect your energy, protect your space, work on yourself, you know. Your career hopefully is no more than 50% of your life. What is the other 50%? And especially, like, I know for me, when I got on Broadway, I lost who I was because my whole personality was the girl trying to get on Broadway. And then here I was and I didn't have a personality anymore. So like now in my life, it's filling in that gap and realizing that the Sunday that I get to sit in my bed and play Animal Crossing for 5 hours is equally as important in my life as the lunch that I'm about to go to with some of my best friends, which is, can be maybe a little, and is probably more important than my show that I have to do tonight. And so I think realize there are so many hours in your day, and what are you doing? Not necessarily like, how are you using those hours, but like, how are you finding joy and peace in those hours?
Yes, you better preach. You better preach, preacher, Pastor Jones, okay? Yes, everybody, this is Taylor Iman Jones. She's going to be at 54 Below on March 6th and March 7th at 7 o'clock.
And it's also my birthday. March 6th is my birthday, so it's my birthday show.
Oh, my goodness, it's a birthday show. We got to put that in the marketing. Oh, yeah, yeah. We gotta tell the world. This is about to be a party now.
Yeah.
Oh, Taylor, this is so exciting. I'm so excited for you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for sitting down and kikiing with me. I know you got a full schedule these days, you know, belting for the people, you know, being one of the six. Yes, that's so exciting. I'm so proud of you. I'm so happy you're just killing it and always looking fabulous doing it.
Thank you. It was so nice chatting with you today. It was truly my pleasure.
Yes. All right, everyone. Well, I'm your host, Kevin Ferguson. Taylor, say bye to the people.
Bye, people.
And we'll see, we'll listen and see you guys and chat with y'all next time. Bye.
You've been listening to the 54 Below podcast, part of the Broadway Podcast Network. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.